been taking any notice of the news over the last few days, you will know that it has been another extraordinary and tumultuous week in the Middle East. Egypt's first freely elected president has been ousted by the military. Mohamed Morsi has been in power for a year now, yet now he finds himself in custody. Yesterday, the head of Egypt's constitutional court is sworn in as an interim leader until new elections are held. Let's take a quick look back at the last few extraordinary days in Egypt's history.
Hundreds of thousands of people have gathered for massive demonstrations across Egypt as pressure grows on President Morsi to step down a year since he became leader.
We are here today so we can topple the regime, topple oppression. I would like to send a message to Morsi. Today is your last day to rule the country.
Egypt's political parties have been given 48 hours to resolve their crisis before the country's military says it'll step in.
The armed forces repeat and renew the call for meeting the people's demands and give everybody 48 hours as a last chance to shoulder responsibilities for the historic moment which the nation is going through. And the nation will not forgive any force that fails to shoulder its responsibilities.
I even spoke to people who basically said, you know, we'd rather the army rule us than President Morsi.
Is this a coup, what we're seeing at the moment?
No, it's not a coup, sir.
16 people were killed, more than 200 people injured during violent clashes in Cairo overnight.
Egypt's President Mohamed Morsi has insisted he will stay in power and called on the army to withdraw its ultimatum for the country's crisis to be resolved by this evening.
The Egyptians declared to the whole world clearly and openly that they have elected a president in a free manner. Egypt cannot be dictated terms or orders or forced in a certain course of action.
The president of Egypt, Mohamed Morsi, has been removed from power by the country's military. In a statement broadcast live on Egyptian television, the head of the armed forces, General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, announced the president will be replaced.
The head of the constitutional court will manage the affairs of the state during the transitional period until a new president is elected.
I was extremely happy and saw my whole family. I left my father at home so that I can go to the street and celebrate it.
Quick look back at some of the sounds that have been coming out of Egypt in the last few days. You may recognise one voice in particular there, that of Ali Mokboul, who used to be a reporter here at BBC Radio York, but now, as you'll know from the evening news on your television, finds himself in the midst of everything going on in Cairo. Well, supporters of the now deposed president are calling for demonstrations against the way in which he was removed from office, and the troops being stationed around Egypt's biggest cities are going to be on heightened alert today. Because today, of course, is the day of Friday prayers, which can often be a moment of great tension at a time of political crisis. Well, let's talk in a little more detail about the situation in Egypt now with York-based author Nick David. He's studied the political situation there as part of research for a new novel that he's written, which is set against the backdrop of the previous Egyptian uprising 2 years ago. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's difficult, it's complicated. All the names to conjure with, all the different factions we're talking about here. Just to start with, what do you make of what's been happening in Cairo in particular and in Egypt in general in the last few days?
Well, I think it comes as a surprise to us because, you know, we're busy watching the tennis. We're going to enjoy a lovely weekend of weather. And a couple of years ago, we thought the situation was dealt with after the revolution. Then there were democratic elections, and we thought, okay, that's all settled. But I think anybody who knows anything about Egypt and knows the context, the background, will realise that it's going to take an awful lot more than that. So in that respect, no, this doesn't surprise me.
Why has it happened?
I think the reason, looking through the newspapers over the last couple of days, actually going back to the origins of the Arab Spring in Tunisia in 2010, when a guy called Mohamed Bouazizi set himself on fire, Not for political reasons. It was because he'd had his pair of electronic scales taken away and his barrel of fruit confiscated by the police. He wanted economic freedom. That was the freedom that he was looking for. He didn't know anything about politics. And I think that's something that's a thread that's run through all these things. Yes, they would like democracy, but I think they want economic freedom. And the current government, or the last government under President Morsi, didn't give them that.
Why not? Well, I mean, he was, you know, it was a democratic election. This is who the people apparently wanted at the time. This is just a case of the people turning around and saying, sorry, mate, you've not delivered on your promise.
I think that's right. And he hadn't delivered economically, and he was trying to impose an Islamist agenda, which the people of Egypt definitely didn't want. I mean, I brought an article with me that was written a couple of years ago, just after the immediate revolution. It said the army certainly wouldn't tolerate an Islamist government for very long. It wasn't in their interest. And that's another key issue. You see, I think the Egyptians deposed their king in 1952, and the army's been in the background, effectively in control ever since. You don't govern in Egypt without the consent of the army. And when this happened, the army wouldn't have ousted President Morsi if it wasn't in their interest to do so. The army has deep vested interests in Egypt. It owns a lot of Egypt. It owns cement works. It owns a lot of the Red Sea resorts. And it's not in their interest to have this particular government. If it wasn't, they wouldn't have acted the way that they did.
Is it in their interest to have this level of instability? I mean, we saw them trying to reassure, I think, the people in Tahrir Square yesterday. There was this extraordinary moment, like nothing I think anyone's ever seen before, with the Egyptian Air Force writing out a great big heart in the vapour trails of their fighter jets over the square to try and send out some kind of message to the people. Because the fear is that what we're talking about here is a coup d'etat. We're talking about tanks rolling into the centre of the Egyptian capital, and that there is a bloodbath on the cards.
Well, that is a possibility, and I think that's something that's greatly feared. But the army seeks to have this relationship with the people. There is a special relationship between the people of Egypt and the army. They do look to them to protect them, and they do have this relationship between them. In the original revolution of 2011, the army stood back. It stood back and allowed things to happen. It didn't interfere in a way that it might have done to support the regime, and it hadn't supported Morsi either.
And why not? Why were they so dissatisfied with him? Was it because of the apparent religious alliances that were coming up, or because of the economic reasons you talked about?
I think the religious alliances were one thing. I also think that the economic situation was another. I mean, Morsi seems to have pursued his Islamist agenda instead of looking after the economy. I mean, there was a slogan that we've had in elections. I've written it down here. Do you remember it? It was, it's the economy, stupid. Do you remember that? I think it's very much the same underlies these things in these other countries. There are two things that are really important to people. I think this is worldwide. One is peace and the other is prosperity. If you give that to people, whether it's through democracy or whether it's not, you will find things a lot more stable.
And yet we are talking about a part of the world where religion is a force in politics like we do not know in this country. What we know is that there are organisations like Al-Qaeda, for example, who realise that in a destabilised country, there is a gap, there is an opening that they can jump into. And we've seen it happen in the Middle East. We've seen it happen, in that region, where they have seen the opportunity to set faction against faction to destabilise things and to bring about their own ways.
Yes, and it's not terribly difficult where you have Islam is polarised. We have Sunni and we have Shia, and that causes all kinds of problems. I mean, a similar sort of parallel in Christian religion is the Protestant and Catholic confrontations that have gone on in Northern Ireland. I mean, we've had terrible problems there. Again, we're on the other side of the water, so it doesn't affect us to the same extent. But if you think about that, then there is a possibility of civil war in Egypt. I think the army will prevent that as much as it possibly can, and it certainly holds the whip hand.
I'm fascinated to know how you got the Egyptian bug, no pun intended. Why did Egypt become a subject of fascination for you? Because you're quite clearly passionate and highly knowledgeable about the place.
Well, I went there in 2000. 2009. It was the holiday of a lifetime. It's the we were there for a family holiday, and it's the one holiday I've enjoyed, I think, more than any other. I was just blown away by the place, and I think that applies to a lot of people who were there. And that was in 2009. I came back, and being an author, I wrote a story based on my experiences there. I put it in the drawer, and then when the revolution kicked off in 2011... And my wife said to me, you need to get that out and do something with it. And I thought, you're absolutely right. I completely rewrote it against the background of the revolution. It became a far more powerful story, and I really got attracted to it. And I did a lot of research, and I hope that's paid off.
There'll be people thinking, why should we care? Why should we in this country be bothered about what happens in Egypt? I mean, Egypt's history. There's always an Egyptian documentary, an Egyptian history documentary about the pharaohs and the pyramids on television, or someone like Michael Palin sailing down the Nile or something like that. Why should it matter to us?
Well, as you mentioned, there's Egypt's history, which is very important culturally, etc. I'm not so sure that that's the primary reason we should be worried about Egypt. I think this is all part of the war on terror. It's vitally important for Western interests that Egypt doesn't fall into the hands of Islamist powers and the people that you've talked about earlier. It's very important geographically. If you think about where it lies between Tunisia, Libya to the west, and the rest of the Middle East and these other countries further east, and it controls the Suez Canal. It's vitally important politically, and it's vitally important geographically.
If folks that are listening this morning want to read your book, what are they looking for?
They're looking for a book called Birds of the Nile. It's formally published by Roundfire at the end of September this year, and I'm looking forward to it coming out.